Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
Hey there, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. Absolute honor that you have joined the number one industrial-related podcast in the universe, and it is dedicated to you. The industrial professionals, the companies that get it done. You're bold, you're brave, you dare greatly, you're changing the world, and boy, do you innovate, and you are helping people. That's why we celebrate you, your companies, and everybody within industry and in manufacturing as well. We've got a great interview where it's a continuation in a series that we've been putting on with Chainyard, and it's with Mohan Venkataraman. That's his last name. That's Venkataraman. And we're talking just about the basics of permission-based blockchain, which I think we need to really understand in this world of COVID and technology and innovation. So we need to get going. It is my goal. It is my my focus to truly understand the value, the benefits of permission-based blockchain. Now, you're saying to yourself, Scott, hey, I understand blockchain. It's Bitcoin and all that stuff. No, it's not. This is specific to creating, communities that have specific permission rights within a permission-based blockchain that is really trying to they have something in common. These communities, these business communities, have something in common and have a common problem that need to be solved through a blockchain type of structure. Now, just bear with me. This is something you're gonna have to work through and learn through. Before we get into that interview, I just want to make sure you understand. We need to collaborate. Yes, I've been hammering on that. Collaboration. We need to innovate. This is why this particular call, conversation, this interview is so important. We need to educate. Again, the Industrial Talk platform is dedicated to education because we need to continuously consume information that helps us through this challenging time and, you know, surpass expectations. And that just comes with the focus and commitment to education. We need to do it with a sense of urgency, sense of speed. And you know what else? This is the final point. We can't be worried about making mistakes. If you're moving forward, if you're daring greatly to make things happen, you're going to, well, make mistakes. Now, they're not the end of the world. They are not. So this platform, the Industrial Talk platform, is truly focused on providing the content, the information, the tools necessary to help industry, to help companies, to help individuals get to that next level and work our way through this pandemic world that we are living in. Okay? You need to collaborate. You need to innovate. Top to bottom, you need to educate. And speaking of education, we've got the Industrial Talk Industrial Academy out at Industrial Talk. That's the Industrial Academy out on Industrial Talk. And it is dedicated. It is dedicated to managing risk. These are the components. Managing risk, reducing cost or saving money, and more importantly, making money through strategies and learning. And it's a great thing. So go out to industrialtalk.com. Look for the Industrial Academy, and for, you know, the price of a Starbucks coffee, you can be committed to your education, specifically from the point of risk management, saving money, or and making money. Things that we really need to be pinpoint focused on. All right, let's get going. Mohan Venkataraman is the Chief Technology Officer at Chainyard. We're going to be, and you're going to have to get through this. This is important stuff. Permission-based blockchain. It is a team sport. This company, Chainyard, people like Mohan in Chainyard, They are leaders in permission-based blockchain. This is a great interview if you want to put your arms around what this might mean. And also, we're going to, at the end, talk a little bit about how to get a hold of Mohan and the wonderful people at Chainyard. So enjoy this interview with Mohan. Hey, Mohan, welcome to the Industrial Talk podcast. So glad that you are here. Thank you very much for joining. I'm a big fan of Mohan, if you can believe that. I am, and we're going to be talking blockchain. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Absolutely beautiful weather here in Cary, North Carolina. So yeah. Can't be better.
Yeah, it's not a bad day here in Louisiana, right outside of New Orleans. It's going to get hot. You know, it's just like North Carolina is going to get hot eventually.
Right.
So if you listen to the other podcast that we had going, and that was with a larger group at Chainyard, we decided that we needed more information about blockchain, permission-based blockchain, and Mohan and other team members have been so gracious to be able to come on the Industrial Talk podcast. So we're gonna just venture right in. We're not even going to go through the salutation of why Mohan is a incredible professional. So let's start laying it out, Mohan. Let's say I'm a company, me, and we're having some challenges, and we're gonna just say, hey, I've been listening to this permission-based blockchain. Let's start from there. What do we do?
So first is we got to understand what the blockchain is. You know, so in order to blockchain has been a big mystery.
It still is
for a number of organizations, right? There are still many companies trying to get a handle on this by doing POCs to prove the concept.
Yeah,
but blockchain really beneath it is just a database. You know, it's a database which is different from other databases in the sense that you can only write on it. You cannot delete the data once it is written. And the only way to write data onto this database is through the blockchain layer itself. So the blockchain is the only way by which you can write data into this database. And the way the data is stored is essentially it is immutable, meaning like you can write, but you cannot delete. And that's the whole miracle behind the blockchain database.
Why do you think it's people are still struggling with it? What's the biggest challenge? Why are we still struggling with it?
So there are technical challenges and there are business challenges, right? Mm-hmm. So blockchain is obviously a team sport. It is not something that a company buys and deploys it within its own premises, right? Traditionally, SAP or Ariba or any CRM system has been working for the enterprise internally. Now, blockchain is a team sport, which means that blockchain is very useful when there is a group of business organizations that have a common interest and a common problem. A good example would be let us say that a company sells widgets to a buyer. Now, technically, there would be a purchase order that goes from the buyer to the supplier, in this case, and the supplier would then ship those widgets to the buyer. Now, there are many things that can happen because the same purchase order that has been signed by both parties has been interpreted differently and then recorded in their respective databases. So there is potential for error in interpretation, potential in terms of the business logic that some developer has coded. Now look at the other problem. So the 100 widgets, let us say, goes to the buyer, and the buyer determines that as soon as the buyer receives those goods, a proof of delivery automatically is signed by the buyer, and that may trigger an invoicing process for the 100 widgets. But meanwhile, the buyer has inspected these 100 widgets and finds that 80 of them are good and he can take them in, and 20 of them are bad and he wants to send them back. Now, this creates a dispute. Now, this dispute obviously gets resolved in normal businesses, but it takes time and brings inefficiency. What if both parties could see those transactions in real time on a common database? And both of them trust that database. So that is really where blockchain comes into play. You know, eliminating friction in the business process and bringing in efficiencies.
Trust is a big deal.
Absolutely. Trust and transparency are very critical. And then decentralization is a very critical aspect of blockchain. Essentially, it means that no single party can control the entire business process or the transaction aspects of this business collaboration.
Yeah, I would imagine it causes some reluctance because now you're giving away. You feel like you're giving something away. Because what you said, it's a team sport, right? And so that in a team sport, you have to give something. And we in industry, we don't do that real well. And plus, because you have all these enterprise systems, we control quite a bit of it. And so you're still telling, I can see how this could be a bit of a challenge.
Well, teams, it is a team sport, which means the entire team, you know, in a team sport, no two players could trust each other, yet together they are able to accomplish a business, to accomplish a goal. So same thing in business, right? No two business entities actually trust each other. You know, that's why you have these contracts and then these legal aspects and interpretation of whether the contract has been recorded the way it has to be.
Right.
Now, in a blockchain, what happens is the same contract is written, code is law. That's kind of a statement that the Ethereum guys make, but code is law, which means the entire contract is coded and both parties or all the parties to this contract agree on it. And they see the same view of the contract. And when any transaction that comes into the blockchain network is actually executed by all these parties using the same logic. And so they all compare answers and they see that the answers are alike. So they trust the result of their transaction. So that's where I think trust comes into play. So if you see, blockchain has got certain characteristics. And some of the key ones would be like decentralization, meaning like no one party controls the aspects of this business process, immutability. So if something is recorded on the database underlying the blockchain, it cannot be changed. You can only write another transaction to correct the errors in a previous one. So you have a transaction history and anyone can come and verify it. That's transparency.
Yeah.
And then there is consensus because nothing gets written on this blockchain database without all the parties agreeing to the results of that transaction. At least 51% must agree to ensure that there has not been any tampering. And then obviously, you know, smart contracts, which is nothing but business logic, is run by every participant who operates a node on this blockchain network. Same code runs. And they all compare answers to the consensus process. So same logic. And obviously, we always call it a trustless network. Nobody trusts the network. So, but because of the network and its consensus capabilities, we start to trust the results of the network. And finally, obviously, privacy is very important. We do not want to expose every transaction to every party. So, for example, two parties on that network have an agreement on a certain price for a certain widget, and the same party has another agreement for the same widget at a different price. You do want to hide the pricing aspects. So blockchain should guarantee a certain level of privacy, and it also has to guarantee a certain level of anonymity of the parties in the transaction. A good example I was talking to the other day was in the supply chain space. Somebody was telling me that if you take those boxes that, let us say, Ralph Lauren or Nike packs its shoes in, and you have the Nike label on the outside, the chances of it getting stolen are 90% being swabbed with fake goods. So they usually ship it with no labels except the barcode. And last but not the least, the most important property is finality. Now, finality essentially means as soon as the transaction happens, at what point in time is it recorded on the database or the blockchain? And that is instantaneous in most permissioned blockchains. Whereas it could take anywhere from a couple of hours to a day or days in many of the crypto-based proof of work type public blockchains.
All right, pencil and paper. This is what we just went over. The properties of blockchain include decentralization, write that down, immutability, transparency, consensus, smart contracts, trust, privacy, and finality. All right, write that down. Why would I want to be a part of a, as a business, why do I want to be a part of a blockchain outside of that and invest my time, energy, and effort into it?
Well, blockchain brings certain capabilities, definitely. The origins of blockchain were all about not trusting any central authority, like the government. That's where it started, right? The ability for the government to print money, to control its supply, to control the value of the money, and to also control how the money is sent from one party to another. This is where it all started when Satoshi Nakamoto wanted a more decentralized way of generating money, keeping the value of money, controlling its supply. And that's where blockchain was born. So that is the first blockchain application is Bitcoin. Now, the underlying strength of blockchain lies where it gives you that capability of all the features that we just talked about. Yep. So that has got plenty of applications, especially as they started to look, especially in the Hyperledger world, which is a project under the Linux Foundation. They started to look at permissioned blockchains, because before this, everything was public. Now, in a permissioned blockchain, technically speaking, you don't have to go through a complex consensus process like proof of work. So if you take Bitcoin or if you take Ethereum, they go through a complex way of agreeing on the answer before a transaction is written inside a block and the block is attached to the blockchain. It's called proof of work. And that proof of work is very intensive in terms of computation and consumption of electricity. And that is not necessary when you are working with a private or a permission blockchain where all members are well known to each other. So one of the differences is in a public blockchain, anyone could become a member, whereas in a permission blockchain, the members are authorized to join the network and be a member of the blockchain network.
Yeah, and I would imagine that level of scrutiny needs to happen in a more public setting, right? As opposed to a private, because, well, you sort of, in essence, brought people on board that you've already done sort of background and all that.
Now, you did ask, why would somebody go for a blockchain? So especially in, it all started more in the fintech industry. The permission blockchain had a lot more, traction in the fintech industry in terms of, commercial paper, trade finance, settlements, and so on.
Right.
If you really look at the settlement process today, there's a lot of distrust. So by the time a transaction is settled, it has to go through multiple parties, and each party verifies the transaction, the aspects of the transaction, and they have a copy of that transaction in their own records.
Right.
Now, the blockchain has capability to bring a lot of efficiency and trust into this whole transaction process. So that's where it started. And as the fintech industry started to pick up traction, other areas of the supply chain saw positive benefits from using the blockchain. And we can go over a few of them. Like typically, there are companies that have experimented with blockchain and discovered that this is not a good opportunity. And there are others who have really found that it is really valuable in the business that they are in.
You're working with, you mentioned it, Hyperledger. Briefly explain a little bit about that, and then we're going to go into the how do we determine, let's say I say, I'm interested in at least pursuing and looking into blockchain. So we can talk about that, but explain a little bit about Hyperledger.
So Hyperledger is actually a project. It is a project under the Linux Foundation. Now, for those who are not familiar with Linux Foundation, similar to the Apache Foundation, Linux Foundation has a number of open source projects. And of course, Linux, the release of Linux is one of their key responsibilities, is they oversee the open source Linux operating system. But apart from that, they have a number of other projects. And Hyperledger was spun out primarily to have a collaborative way of developing a blockchain platform or mini blockchain platform. So they wanted to nourish the development of blockchain networks with innovation, especially in the permission blockchain space.
Right.
And so when Linux Foundation, one of the first founding members, among many others, included IBM, with whom we have had a lot of opportunity to work with. So under the Linux Foundation, the Hyperledger project nurtures a number of blockchain platforms. So notable ones are Hyperledger Fabric, for which IBM contributed a lot of the initial source code. Intel contributed a lot of code to another platform called Sawtooth Lake. A third from Soramitsu came, and then it was called Iroha. And now, obviously, we have an Ethereum flavor called Hyperledger Bezu, and we have another flavor for identity management, which is called Hyperledger Indy. So there are a number of blockchain platforms that are either matured, or some of them are maturing under the Hyperledger project. And of course, you know, the Hyperledger project has a governance structure. They'll oversee how these projects evolve, at what point are they out of incubation. In addition to that, the Hyperledger project runs a number of special interest groups and other projects that actually supplement the work that is being done on these platforms.
Okay, so let's say I said, yeah, I'm going to come to Chainyard and I'm interested. I'm interested in looking at leveraging the technology of blockchain, permission-based. What do you do?
Well, early on, when we first started working on the blockchain solutions for our clients, it was kind of interesting because we try to figure out what is the right opportunity, and we try to apply some of the traditional methodologies that have been, you know, you go ahead and go to a whiteboard and you draw out the business process and see what the problems are, problem spaces are, and so on and so forth. But then as we started to understand the blockchain more and more, we started to follow a certain methodology, and we call it, we start with discovery, and then we move on from a discovery phase all the way into other aspects of identifying, applying design thinking when we identify the opportunity, and then trying to convert the opportunity into something that we call a minimum viable product, that or a POC, one of the two that can be an outcome. Taking that minimum viable product or the POC to a statement of work on what exactly we want to do, and then we roll it out as a sprint project or a scrum and sprint project. Now, so what we do essentially is we go into an organization and say, like, we work with some of their business executives essentially, and look at what do they do, you know, what is their business about, and then we
you have to really look at their existing or as is business processes. You do this and this, and you got to lay that out. Absolutely.
Well, yes, the first step is actually looking at what business processes do they execute.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the more important one is where the business process really has interaction with their business partners. So if I have an internal business process that just updates some financial transactions in a ledger, I really don't care. But if that process has got interaction with their business partners, a good example would be supplier, buyer, you know, logistics operator, warehouse, third-party logistics provider, and a contract manufacturer, a good collaborative business process network here. So this would be a good example of looking at the business processes and seeing what portion of their business can fit into a mold. So that's our very first exercise, is to look at their current business process and then try what industry are they in, narrowing down that area that we really need to investigate. And of course, you know, the next step is we look at design thinking, and design thinking is all about how do we innovate or bringing in a solution that is different and brings efficiency and innovation into solving that problem. So we go through this whole design thinking process, and that itself will take a whole segment. But in short, It essentially looks at the business process, all the personas who are involved, and then it dissects the personas into what do they say, what do they do, what do they feel, and what do they think at any point in time. And that gives us a picture of their pain points. So once you know the pain points, sometimes the pain points can just be simple internal issues because they have an application that is inefficient internally. But sometimes the pain points could truly be something that is that requires attention because it involves multiple parties. So we have to narrow down the pain points and see which ones really are candidates for blockchain. And once we get that, then it is very easy for us to define what the minimum viable product should be that can work in a production-like environment, but at the same time demonstrates the value of blockchain internally. And of course, the rest of it is more about project management.
Yeah, and what I hear you saying there, Mohan, it behooves companies at least to begin looking at this technology as a way of being able to help them from a business perspective, but it requires a lot of upfront analysis. And then once you nail it down, and just like anything else, just like any project, you've got to really understand the business, the processes, and the pain points to be able to develop an effective solution to deal with whatever they're trying to accomplish and become more efficient or whatever the objective might be.
Very true.
Yeah. And you guys, you laid it out. Listeners, I'm looking at a PowerPoint presentation, a cut down, quite frankly, a cut down. And the amount of detail and information is staggering. For example, they have a 23 sort of specific questions to ask. And they're very probing. They're very, very... very insightful, and so I can really see how this is truly beneficial from how you guys approach a blockchain project.
Fundamental, in a blockchain, I need at least one more. There are two participants in the network in a business relationship. Otherwise, I should have a minimum of two. That if I don't have a minimum of two, it's straightforward. There's no opportunity for blockchain. Now, obviously, the rest of the questions go in to see, are there inefficiencies in your system? Do you have disputes because the quality of data between your partners is not matching? Or do you have compliance and regulatory issues? You're not able to track effectively, resulting in penalties. Do you have legal problems?
It goes right back to the properties of the blockchain when you start talking about decentralization, immutability, transparency, consensus. And as you look at the business and some of the challenges and the problems that they're dealing with, they can be removed as a result of the properties of a blockchain.
Absolutely.
Because you got trusted contracts or smart contracts, trusted people, privacy, finality, all of that good stuff. Okay, we're going to have to wrap it up, unfortunately. Mohan, we're going to continue this conversation because there's so much more that we can talk about on trust or permission-based blockchain. You active out there on LinkedIn?
Yes, I'm very active on LinkedIn, and those who are really interested in understanding our approach and methodology, I'd be happy to share a formal copy of how we approach these things.
Yeah, and we're eventually going to get that for the... for his podcast out on industrialtalk.com. All right, Mohan, hate to wrap it up, but we've got some more we're going to cover in the near future. Listeners, hang tight. I'm going to wrap it up on the other side. Thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk podcast. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
Hey, again, thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk podcast. It's an absolute honor to be a part of a great community such as industry and manufacturing. Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing in changing lives and making a tremendous global impact. Thank you very much. Mohan Venkataraman, that's a Venkataraman, He's the Chief Technology Officer, once again, with Chainyard. He knows his stuff. As you could tell by that interview, he knows his stuff, and it's something that you're just going to have to do and understand, because it brings tremendous value to your business, to how you conduct going forward. And, you know, when we start talking about resiliency, there it is. That's exactly what it's all about. So I hope you enjoyed that interview with Mohan. Again, you got to be talking about collaboration. Collaborate with him. You got to be talking about innovation. You got to innovate with him. And that's Chainyard. And you got to educate. Go out to industrialtalk.com. Find the Industrial Academy. And we're going to be talking about, and we do talk about, and we train too, reducing risk, saving money, and making money. Very simple. That is what we're all about here at the Industrial Talk podcast and the Industrial Academy. Again, thank you very much. Be bold, be brave, dare greatly. Thank you very much for what you do. You're changing the world. And we'll be back with another great interview shortly.